Many dimensions of human existence come into focus in the crucifixion of Jesus. But none comes into sharper focus in the mystery of freedom. The freedom of Jesus, who set his face like flint toward Jerusalem and who from his cross prayed for his crucifiers. The freedom of the people standing by watching. The freedom of the criminals crucified with Jesus, the one joining the scoffers, the other asking for help. And then there is the freedom of God, who in sovereignty over nature and history raised Jesus Christ from the dead. Now, the very possibility of a crucifixion tells us a great deal about the nature of human existence. Animals may be, and in fact are, very brutal to each other. But animals do not, so far as we know at least, have crucifixions. A crucifixion is a human phenomenon that we have to take seriously if we are to understand who we are. It is a combination of human freedom and human destiny. But there is also the sheer wonder of the resurrection. It tells us about a freedom that is beyond us and that is our hope, the freedom of God. The gospel is not our human freedom. The gospel is the freedom of God. The freedom of God over nature and over history. The freedom of God that raised Jesus Christ from the dead, undoing what evil people had done on Good Friday, and overcoming the forces of destruction in nature. Lucien Febvre, a very remarkable French historian, in an excellent study of the 16th century, has written that the persons whom the Protestant reformers called atheists were not people who did not believe in the existence of God. Contemporary forms of atheism and the contemporary factors that lead to atheism either did not exist or were not possible in the 16th century. So when Calvin talks about an atheist, he does not mean a person who does not acknowledge a God somewhere in the universe, a God with some kind of power in the universe. Calvin means by an atheist the person who believes in a God, but who believes in a God who will not or who cannot act intentionally and purposefully in human history and in nature. Now, over against this form of atheism, the Westminster Confession spoke of the living God. That is the God who speaks and who acts intentionally and purposefully in history and in nature. And increasingly, it seems to me that the most serious issue in the life of the church, as well as in the more official realms of serious and particularly school theology, is that which is raised between those who conclude that God is a name for vague powers that impinge upon us, sustaining us and ordering our lives. And finally, though this incidentally is seldom mentioned by the theologians, destroying us. We cannot think of these powers, we are told, in personal terms, but we may be allowed to relate ourselves to them in some personal way, which I would assume is some form of a theological aspirin tablet to enable us to adjust to the hard facts of human existence. Outside the university lounges, there are facts of human experience, sometimes very powerful in their psychological impressiveness on us, that point in this direction. And yet it is very significant that ordinary people who live life in the marketplace, as it were, do not seem to be so overwhelmed by these aspects of existence that seem to point to a God who is without intentionality and purpose, at least as far as our existence is concerned. Or else one would have a great deal of difficulty explaining the tremendous revival of religion in our time. Ordinary people, it seems to me, experience too many factors in life that cannot be accounted for faith, which concludes that God is simply impersonal powers and forces that sustain and direct our lives, but a power that cannot be thought of personally, who does not know in a real living sense that we're here. Theologians are influenced by the notion that we were not here in the beginning and we shall not be here in the end. But if we believe in God in the sense that the church has proclaimed the reality of God, and if we believe in God in the sense that the Bible speaks of God, we believe in the living God who acts and who speaks intentionally in nature and in history. And it's simply not true, according to this faith, that we were not here in the beginning and that we will not be here in the end. We were chosen by God before the foundation of the earth. And it is our faith that we shall be with God at the end of all things. Now, Easter confronts us in our everyday existence with this question of faith. Do we really believe in God? Do we really believe in God? I have a friend, graduate of this institution, now pastor of one of the most distinguished churches in America, who says it's very difficult to be a minister if one does not believe in God. It leads to burnout rather quickly. But it's not simply a professional question, it's an existential question. Do we believe in God? Do we believe in the God who raised Jesus Christ from the dead? In the God who in the resurrection of Jesus undid what evil persons had done on Good Friday? In the God who is sovereign over the powers of nature and did not leave Jesus Christ in the power of death? Do we believe, as Karl Barth put it, in this God? That is the question that Easter confronts us with, the question of God. John Calvin and Farrell began the Reformation in Geneva by abolishing Easter. And in our own tradition, it remained taboo until the beginning of this century, when they began to mention it in church school literature. And finally, since the Second World War, we've begun to celebrate Easter and then Maundy Thursday and Good Friday in Presbyterian churches. Whether or not this is a good or bad thing,
will be determined in human history. But let us hope that this recovery of the Christian year will at least confront us with the question of faith. Let us hope that Easter is not simply a revival of some kind of nature religion in which we celebrate the energies and vitalities of nature and the human spirit. Let us hope that this Easter we're confronted with the question of faith. Do we believe in the God who raised Jesus Christ from the dead? And the answer to this question will not come from reading a book or from study. It will more likely come as we share in the worshiping, believing life of the Christian community, the fellowship of those who do believe that God raised Jesus Christ from the dead and who live in the power of the resurrection. It will come as we read our New Testaments, not as students preparing for an exam or to write a paper, but waiting to hear the gospel of God's freedom. It will come, first of all, by the power of the Holy Spirit. So Easter comes to us, if it comes, as a gift
we must patiently